Welcome, everyone. It's Anna De La Rosa, your host for your Meditation and Mindfulness Project. Today, we have Christy Arbon, and she is with us from HeartWorks, and we're so excited to have her. How are you, Christy?
I'm great, Anna. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, it's so nice for you to come and join me on this journey and learn more about how meditation and mindfulness can change us from the inside out.
Absolutely. There's no end to what we can learn about meditation and mindfulness.
You know, and I was so intrigued by your story and how, you know, you've learned so much through your practice as well as your schooling and your study and your work history. And I wanted to know, and as well as I wanted you to tell the audience, how has all of that helped you discover the missing piece in your life?
It's a great question. Well, I've always been interested in things to do with how the mind works. I studied psychology at university and philosophy and social work. Always wanted to understand what's going on up there, and especially what's going on when things go wrong, when we have difficulty, when we have difficult emotions. What's the process there, and what can we do to help ourselves out when things go wrong? So that started from a really young age, from university age. And then I started getting into mindfulness practice at about the same time. So when I was around 18 or 19, started to do some meditation. I hated it to start with, I must admit, because I couldn't do it. It was too hard. My brain wouldn't slow down. My mind wouldn't slow down. And so, you know, I was in an academic frame of mind, and which is very much around, are you passing or are you failing? And so to me, I was failing meditation. I was failing mindfulness because my idea of mindfulness was to sit and clear my mind completely and to do that for a good 45 minutes to an hour. And if I couldn't do that, then I'd failed. So I got pretty grumpy about that. It's like, I don't want to do something I'm going to fail at. But I worked out a bit later on that that's actually not the goal of mindfulness or meditation, to make yourself sit still for an hour and clear your mind. The reality is the mind is never clear. The mind is designed to wander around. It's what it does when we're not engaged in something concrete. It'll go to plans for the future. It will ruminate about the past. It'll try and put all the pieces of the puzzle together so that we can work out how can I move forward in my life based on what I learned in the past. So that very early expectation of mindfulness, I learned later down the track to let go of that. You could be sitting in mindfulness or meditation and your mind could wander 20 times in 2 minutes. It's not a problem, absolutely not a problem, because the mind, as I said, it's designed to do that. So it wasn't until much later that I actually got more involved in mindfulness and meditation. It was, I come from Australia, so I've been in the States for about 10 years now, and it's been, since I've been in the States, I've really gotten more into practicing mindfulness and meditation, mostly in the Buddhist tradition. So I worked at a Buddhist study center in Massachusetts for about five years. So was surrounded by some really dedicated practitioners of mindfulness and meditation and some really amazing teachers of mindfulness and meditation and the psychology of Buddhism, the philosophy, how everything works in the mind and in the brain. So it was a very rich time for me then, sort of learning all these hoping that all of this would rub off on me from all these really amazing teachers and practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, I've been continuing the journey, deepening my experience of mindfulness and meditation and self-compassion. That's actually been a big, if we're looking for a missing piece, it's probably bringing the self-compassion into the mindfulness practice that has been most important for me. So that's been my focus lately is I now teach mindfulness and self-compassion. To me, the two are linked. You can't have one without the other. And so that is my practice, and that's also what I teach now. So that's the short story of how I got here.
I love how everything really just comes together. And, you know, I am so like you when it has to come with the mind and how it works. And that's really what got me involved with it as well. I know that I have been practicing, you know, meditation for a couple of years now, but I've recently started to, you know, dab a little in the mindfulness. And like you said, you do have to have that self compassion, and you have to learn that you can wander. Your mind can, you know, get off track and you're not doing something wrong. It's a process. And I really love how you have had so much experience and, you know, with all of the different places you've been and, you know, where you're studying and how you've gotten where you are today. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think this self-compassion piece, this is what has been missing in our Western idea of mindfulness and meditation. We can tend to idealize what mindfulness and meditation is. A lot of what we know about these practices has come from Eastern traditions, and so we have this picture of the monk sitting cross-legged for hours on end with a completely empty mind, and that's what we think mindfulness and meditation is. But in the West, we have such harsh inner critics, and we can set such high expectations for ourselves. We do need to, as you said, bring in that added component of self-compassion and that giving our mind permission to wander as well. When we're really strict with ourselves, that's actually a barrier to deepening our practice. We won't go further into our understanding of ourselves if we can't accept ourselves for who we are. So we really need to bring in some kindness to ourselves, some of that self-compassion practice as well.
Yeah, and would that be the best way to describe or explain self-compassion to the audience, that it just brings some kindness to yourself and not be so hard?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Actually, part of self-compassion is mindfulness. So when we say mindfulness and self-compassion go together, one of the components of self-compassion is mindfulness. The other one is kindness, yeah, being kind, hearing that inner critic, which we all have, and just sort of tempering that voice a little bit. Like, okay, I hear what you're saying, but you're a bit mean. Like, give me a break.
Yeah,
so bringing in some kindness there to as an antidote to that inner critic. And then the third part of self-compassion is knowing that our experience is very similar to that of other people's experience. Basically, we're not alone. When we feel isolated, that can really contribute to us to increasing difficult emotions. Imagine if you're feeling sad and you don't feel like there's anyone you could connect to or turn to, you actually just feel worse. So the third component of self-compassion is understanding that you're not alone, and even reaching out to other people just so that you do have the support of connection with other people when you're feeling bad. So in terms of a mindfulness or a meditation practice, meditating with other people is a really great way to get in touch with that common humanity piece of self-compassion.
Oh, that's really good. I have never done that before, and I know that a lot of people have said, you know, to get in the group because you get a lot done.
Yeah, it can give you, it can make you accountable, but not in any sort of harsh way. It just means, people, you know, once you get into an established group and people get to know you, it's like people look forward to seeing you, and
exactly.
they expect that they'll be hanging out with you on that, you know, Monday night or whenever it is
yeah.
you get together to meditate. So it helps to motivate us to meditate if we do it in a group, for sure.
You know, I've always done, you know, groups and everything online, but, you know, trying to find one, you know, in our town or whatever, I have not had a chance to do that. And it's been on my mind because you want to be around like-minded people. And I know that being on, you know, groups online and your Facebook groups and stuff like that really helps us with that accountability and learning.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, the online option is great these days. You know, we wouldn't have had that option 10 years ago. So I think if there isn't a group, if there isn't a group in your local area, then there's so many opportunities online to join meditation groups or even the apps available on smartphones where you can, you know, you're meditating with other people and you can connect with other people on the app.
Correct.
So I'd say that's the next best thing to being able to practice in person. Because, you're right, we're not always in a community where there are a bunch of other people who want to meditate with us. So we do the best we can, don't we?
We sure do, and we'll find it. Or sometimes it comes to us when we're really, you know, when we look for it, it just happens to come upon us. Like the books fall off the shelf and, you know, the teachings we need just show up, and that's usually meaning we're in the right place at the right time. I wanted to ask, what meditation do you offer as far as something that someone can do, you know, quickly if they're busy, or that would help them stop and get mindful, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So we can meditate for a really short time. It doesn't have to be a long time. I've got a number of 5-minute meditations on my website, heartworks.training. So just 5 minutes is enough. And each of these meditations, we go through mindfulness of a particular kind of sensation. And this is one of the simplest kinds of meditation we can do. So mindfulness of the sensation of touch. What does it feel like? What does our body feel like when we're experiencing touch? Mindfulness of our breathing. That's sort of the traditional mindfulness practice is being aware of our breathing. Mindfulness of sound. We can just sit for 5 minutes and be aware of the sounds in our environment. And then also mindfulness of internal body processes. So we might notice a sensation in muscles. Maybe there's a bit of an ache or a pain, or we notice the rumbling of our belly or something like that. So we can be aware of internal processes. So I've got those meditations on my website as really short ones. And then there are some longer ones as well. But for something really accessible, those short 5-minute ones are great.
That's great. And I'll have all of your information on my website, as well as the information that I send out, you know, during the course of the summit. But basically, I just want to, you know, thank you for your insight and coming aboard and helping us know that, you know, mindfulness can change us from the inside out as long as we just stop and take the time. Because not only does it do that, it can also help every area of our lives, not just, you know, our current, you know, state. It can help a lot from, you know, our physical, mental, emotional, financial. It just, there's so many things that it can do to help us.
It definitely can. Yeah, you're spot on there. And it needn't be an onerous task. It's the regularity of our mindfulness practice that is really important. The research has shown that people who meditate or have a mindfulness practice that they practice every day, and it could just be 5 minutes or 10 minutes, if you do that every day, that state that you bring your mind into during meditation, which is the, as you say, it's the stopping, the bringing awareness to our experience, quietening down the mind, giving ourselves a little breathing space. The more we put ourselves into that trait during meditation, the more it becomes a trait that we carry out into our daily life. So the more we practice, studies have shown just 2 weeks of a mindfulness practice, doing a short mindfulness practice every day, increased people's ability to do things like concentrate on a task at hand. I think there was one study that even showed that mindfulness increased students' IQ, partly because it helped them to concentrate, and it helped them to let go of that inner critic, so they weren't hampered by feeling stressed about their experience. They could just focus on the task at hand.
Correct.
It can help us in our relationships. So if we have a mindfulness practice, and we know that if we take a pause before we respond to something, then we're probably going to come from a more centered, equanimous place. So if we practice every day, we're more likely to remember, you know, in the heat of the moment with an argument with our spouse or our boss or whoever it might be, we're more likely to remember, hey, if I just center myself, if I become aware of my own experience and take care of myself and then respond from that place, it's going to be a more skillful response. So, yeah, absolutely, mindfulness, it's as long as we practice it, we can't just sort of do it once a month and think it's going to help us out, you know, for an extended period of time. As long as we keep up with the practice, it will extend out into every aspect of our life.
And the consistency, like you said, and in my experience, you get addicted.
You can, I know, you especially... And one of the really nice things that you can do is to set up a space in your house. If you have a space, and my space is just a little corner in my living room, but I've set it up so it's really aesthetically pleasing. I really want to go and sit in that little space and sit in meditation. I bought myself a comfortable cushion and a platform to sit on. And so I know when I sit down, I have these associations that are very pleasant associations. It's, I have permission to not work. I have permission to not plan, not think, not ruminate about things. And so, yeah, fairly soon you can get sort of addicted to that. And and it, as I said, it really helps if you have a little space in your house that is your special sacred meditation space.
I love that. And, you know, you're a certified mindfulness self-compassion teacher, and your website is filled with so many amazing tools, and I can't wait for everybody to go on and, you know, look to see all the different things that you have going on and offer. And the main thing is, you know, with us getting the word out of meditation and mindfulness and compiling the both of them, and not just one or the other, it really does make it a unique and special offer, because you can just do it anywhere and everywhere. You don't have to be in your spot, but you know that when you have time to go in your, you know, sacred space, and you can do that. But you can also do it when you're driving, or, you know, get, you know, whenever you're able to get it done.
Absolutely. I think it's really important for us to remind ourselves of that, because we have busy lives these days. We're juggling a lot of different things. We've got home life, children, spouses, maybe elderly parents we're taking care of. We've got our job and our expectations there, and then all, you know, the kids' extracurricular activities and driving kids around every afternoon. And then weekends, we don't get a break. So it's so important to identify little moments when you can practice mindfulness. So you could do it in your car on the way to work. Maybe turn the radio off. Don't listen to the radio. See if you can just bring mindfulness to your experience. Or listen to, there are some great podcasts and recordings about mindfulness, about training in mindfulness. Listen to something like that on the way to work rather than listening to the news in the morning.
Yeah.
It'll probably put you in a much, much better mood by the time you get to work.
That's what I do when I'm driving and taking my daughter here and there, and sometimes, you know, picking her up from school. I have an hour, you know, sometimes I'm waiting for her. It's just, you never know, and I utilize that time, and I make sure that every second of my day is utilized when I'm not running around getting stuff done.
Great, great. We've really got to remind ourselves that this is important, that this practice is important. That's the only way we're going to remember to do it. So actually another way we can bring mindfulness into our daily life is to identify something we do in our day, something really simple like brushing our teeth, and decide when I brush my teeth, I'm going to bring mindfulness to my experience. So that's my practice. So how long do you brush your teeth for? Is that probably 5 minutes at the most?
Yeah.
You've got five minutes of mindfulness there as you brush your teeth. So you've not even had to find extra time in your day. You've just value-added that experience of brushing your teeth. You've turned that into a mindfulness practice.
You incorporate it in, and you know, it's really funny because sometimes whenever you are in the hustle and bustle, you wonder, how did I get from point A to B? I don't even remember.
I know. Well, it's one of the great things about the brain. It can do that. It can get onto autopilot. But, that's not mindfulness, is it?
Exactly. That's not. So we can incorporate it any time of day, and we just have to remember. And that's what we're doing today. And, you know, having everybody join us with the summit, your meditation and mindfulness project, I want to thank you, Christine, for coming aboard, helping us just learn a little bit more that we didn't know, you know, today and yesterday, and really letting us know that it isn't that hard and we can really be mindful a lot of the time and not even, you know it. We need to start, you know, realizing that.
Yeah, yeah. We just need to remember, maybe put little notes up for ourselves, reminding us to practice. And, you know, I have a strong belief that if we were all able to bring more mindfulness into our day, we could radically change our society, radically. If everyone was mindful in their day, if everyone did 5 minutes of mindfulness or meditation, we'd be a very different culture. So that's my hope for the world, is one day we'll all be mindfulness practitioners.
Yes, and we can change by one person at a time, and that's why we want to tell everybody about it. And I want to thank you, Christy, for being aboard, and I'm going to have all your information on the website and, like I said, on the summit emails, and everybody's going to be able to get a hold of you if they need to, as well as, you know, visit your free meditations and all of the wealth of information that you have online.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for having me, Anna. Thanks so much for offering this series. This is such a valuable thing to be offering folks. So, and I know it takes a lot of effort to do it. So thanks so much for doing this.
Well, you know, thank you for jumping aboard. And, you know, I think it's really so much fun because I treat it like a research project because I love it so much that it really gets me fired up and excited that I really just want to do whatever I can to get the word out. Does that make sense?
That does. That's great. The world needs people like you getting the word out.
Yeah, and it's all free, and they have it at the their hands, and they can just get online and, you know, listen to it and learn about it. But, you know, we can only offer, and they have to put it to practice.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but the offering is a big part of that. You need to know this stuff is accessible before you can move forward with it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna.